Okay, we're ready to start. Everybody, please take your seat. My name is Myron Fox, and I call this annual town meeting session to order. I declare a quorum present. There are no coffee and snacks tonight. Please turn off cell phones and any devices that emit audible noises. Please don't forget, when you want to be recognized, to start off by giving your name and address for the record. If you desire to be recognized, just raise your card from your seat, and I will try to do so. I would like to thank Radha Gargaya and Phyllis Fox, two of the greatest mic runners in the history of town meeting, from last night. But fortunately now, we have our Boy Scout regulars. Tim Dunphy, over there. Hi, Tim. And Mark Tentatelli, right to my right. And the Troop 63 is led by Fred Rust. And just a reminder that there'll be no hissing, booing, whistling, clapping, or the like before, during, or after the time someone is speaking. No disrespectful comments directed at a voter, speaker, or town official. Anybody need a warrant? Raise your hand. Third night even better than the second night. Bathrooms are across the hall from the floor of the auditorium. Fire exits are the two rear doors here and the two doors on the stage, up the two stairways. And a couple things about amendments and the end of last night's town meeting, which are in order. Whenever possible, I would ask those who wish to make amendments to please email them to our technology administrator, Mark Thompson, at least 24 hours in advance, if not more, if you know that you're making the amendment. There are 24 hours before the article is to come up before town meeting. If you know well in advance, then do it well in advance. There are three advantages to you and to the rest of the hall. Number one, we can have someone type it out and put it in the proper order so that the rest of the hall doesn't have to wait around while that happens. It can be done in advance. Number two, as we saw last night, occasionally someone will write an amendment and I'll declare it outside the four corners of the main motion and therefore not able to be heard. If you get it to the technology advisor administrator a few days in advance, he's going to share that with me, and I'm going to take a look at it and see, then decide whether it's within the scope. And if it's not, we'll try to give you a hand to rewrite it to make it within the scope and still carry forward your intent. But I can't do that on town meeting floor when it's just handed to me as you make the motion. So the more the advance notice, it's to your benefit as well as the hall's. And the last thing is, lots of times, when someone makes an amendment, it may be something that the person who made the motion didn't think of. And if you get it to the technology administrator in advance and he shares that with the person making the motion, that person may decide that they like your amendment and incorporate your amendment into the motion just like you have it written. That'll not only save lots of times, but lots of confusion. And the presentation, the original motion that person's making, will include your amendment. So without the need to make an amendment, it also saved time. So three good reasons why you should give your amendment whenever possible in advance to Mark Thompson, whose email address is Thompson, M for Mark, at sudbury.ma.us. Let's talk about zoning amendment and last night. I can only give you my own experience with zoning amendments from going to, I was a member of the Zoning Board of Appeals, I was a member of the Board of Selectmen, I've been to many planning board hearings, I helped write a section of the zoning bylaw in Sudbury, and I've attended town meeting for 40 years. Trying to amend a zoning proposal by committee at town meeting is always an unmitigated disaster. And if you don't believe me, just watch the tape from last night. So please, even more so with zoning amendments, if you're thinking of changing something, give the person, typically it's the planning board, they usually propose them, give them advance notice. Again, maybe they'll incorporate your amendment right in or explain to you why that amendment won't work. But again, the zoning bylaw in Sudbury, like many zoning bylaws, is like the Internal Revenue Code. You change a few words in it, and suddenly it's inconsistent with another section that you never even thought of, nowhere near the section that's being amended. So just whenever possible, if you can live with the zoning amendment, the zoning motion that's being proposed, again, trying to change it by committee just doesn't work. And the last thing I want to... Oh, and also, the question came up is... Well, first let me talk about points of order, because we had some of those yesterday, and I haven't read this to you in a year, so I think it's time to read it. And what is a proper point of order? Points of order raise a question so important as to justify the interruption of a speaker. I'm sorry, I'm reading from Town Meeting Times. So raise a question so important as to justify the interruption of a speaker. For this reason, it needs to be carefully defined, since some have the erroneous impression that it is merely a label which, by being prefixed to whatever the interrupter has to say, gives uninhibited license to break in and seize the floor. On a point of order, these are not my words, I'm reading from Town Meeting Times. On a point of order, a voter may raise one or more of the following questions and no others. One, is the speaker entitled to the floor? Example would be a non-resident who hasn't got consent to the hall. So you could have a point of order, he doesn't have permission to speak. Another one would be, we have someone who's timing all these, but if you're quite certain that our timer doesn't work right, and you think the person has spoken for more than 5 minutes, that would be a point of order. They're beyond their time limit. So that's number one. Number two, is what the speaker is saying or proposing unseemly, frivolous, irrelevant, illegal, or contrary to proper procedure? That would be a proper point of order. And thirdly, so that's the speaker saying, and then the third one is any pending action frivolous, irrelevant, illegal, or contrary to proper procedure? Those are the three reasons why someone makes a point of order. This does not mean that you cannot make the point you're trying to make. You just can't interrupt someone, and you can't speak without recognition by the moderator. So you're welcome to make the point, but not at the exact time you want to make it if it's not one of those three things. And the reason is obvious. If too many people take advantage of the point of order, then there's chaos, because everyone just jumps up and starts speaking whenever they feel like it. And that's why, if my math is correct, 370 years ago, they created a moderator at every town meeting so someone could keep the rules. And that's my job. That's my only job. I'm not involved in the substance of any articles. I'm just here to keep order and enforce the rules. So before you make your next point of order, please try to remember that. Because if you don't, I'll remind you. Article 21, before we get into the motion. For those of you who were a little confused, our bylaw does allow a motion to adjourn in the middle of debate when there's a motion on the floor. It's totally permitted. It's very rare. I can't remember the last time we did it, and I don't think we're going to do it again for a very, very long time. But things were so confusing, and I'm grateful that Ms. Abrams made the suggestion, without saying point of order, made the suggestion that things are a little confusing here, and perhaps it would be better if we finish this up tomorrow. I did indeed ask the proponent of the motion, the person making the presentation, Jody Kablack, and she also agreed that it would be a good idea, given the Internal Revenue Code of our zoning bylaw, it would be a good idea for the planning board and or Ms. Cablack and the zoning board and the board of selectmen to look at the entire bylaw, the cell tower bylaw, and see how these amendments in the motion would fit in. And that's been done, and now we have a new motion. So, with the permission of the board of selectmen and Ms. Cablack, who made the amendment, the board of selectmen made the motion, do I have your respective permissions to withdraw your motions and your amendment? Was that affirmative? I have two affirmatives. And the people, I'm sure, in this section right here, who made the seconds, do you both withdraw your seconds? Thank you very much. Okay. Mr. O'Brien, would you care to make a new motion on Article 21?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening. And we have worked this morning to clarify things, working with Mr. Clough, and I again apologize. I spoke as if the zoning board had brought it. Mr. Clough had brought the amendment, and we were agreeable to it. And this morning, similar to what you began to see last night.
Mr. O'Brien, I apologize.
I'm sorry. Yes, Mr. Moderator. Moving the words of the article, except that in the new section 4346, the words exclusive of school building and cemeteries shall be changed. That was yesterday's motion. Move in the words of the article, except for the following changes. Number 4 shall read, add a new section 4336, which shall read as follows. 4336, all property and buildings owned by the town of Sudbury, exclusive of school buildings, school properties, and cemeteries. And add a new number 7, which shall read, section 4351, to revise the section numbers in that provision to read 4331 through 4336.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. As I incorrectly started off by saying that we have corrected this and cleaned it up, and as Ms. Cablack was proposing last night, the way to integrate Mr. Clough's suggestion that a special permit be the process for the approval of new cell towers, we can do that by adding this section here, 4336, and that is the section of the zoning bylaw that requires a special permit. So that answers that section. As I had said last night during my presentation, and we cleaned up the language tonight to be school buildings and school properties, so that that was very clear. And then the legal office added section 7 just to make sure that everything was in a tidy bow. Since most of you were here last night, I am not going to repeat my presentation. We'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have, and we urge your support as we had done last night.
Thank you. Okay, and did you report the Board of Selectmen's position?
Our position is we support this article.
Okay, and can we hear from the Finance Committee?
Finance Committee supports this article.
Okay. Eric Polk or someone from the Planning Board have an opinion on this? Yes, if you can give us the opinion of the Planning Board, please.
Planning Board supports this article.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on article, this motion on the view graph on Article 21? Mr. Kosar.
Bill Kosar, 419 Concord Road. Could we go back to the previous slide, please?
Mr. Kosar, were you intending to make an amendment?
I'm going to point out an error.
Okay.
Paragraph 4334. Two parcels have been deleted from that. 008 and 009 have been deleted. And those are water district properties. And it's my belief that the town does not have the authority to delete water district properties.
Okay. Without getting into the legality of it, why don't we ask the selectmen and the planning board if they have any problems if we added those two parcels back in?
The Planning Board and the Board of Selectmen have no problem if they're added back in. And Town Council was whispering to me that Mr. Cosart is correct.
Hang on. Mr. O'Brien, if you want to stay right there,
yes.
Since you made the motion, do we have your permission, without bothering to amend, to add? Can we put the original motion back on the view graph, please? Mr. Cosart, what are those two lots?
008
and 009. No. Oh, I see. We're gonna have to add something here. Hang on. Do you have that bylaw that I gave you?
Oh, you gave it back.
You gave it back. What section was it? 4334?
4334.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's crossed out here. Somewhere in there. Yeah, I have this thing here. What? For the moment, we're going to actually have to amend it because it's a little bigger than just adding a few words up there. So thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Anybody else, before we get to the amendment, anyone wants to have any discussion on the Article 21? Yes, please stand.
Richard Lawrence, 6 Partridge Lane. I just have a question. Why are school buildings and properties excluded from the overlay district?
Mr. O'Brien, why are school buildings and cemeteries excluded?
Not necessarily cemeteries. That was answered last night. But just
okay. Why are school buildings excluded?
Yes.
Buildings and properties. It was just the feeling last year of the Planning Board and this year in the article that was originally written for last year and then withdrawn, and the Planning Board this year, that tends to be an emotional issue if an application is filed, although the federal law prohibits using reasons of health or aesthetics as a reason to deny these. The cell companies prefer to try and be cited on parcels that do not meet with a lot of town and citizen resistance, and our past experience is that people, especially with young children, are concerned about cell towers being too close to the buildings and the radiation that might come from them. So it's a course of least resistance.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you. Anybody? You can stay right there. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 21? Yes. Yes. Wait for the mic.
Laura Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. Would it be appropriate to move this article to the end of the warrant?
No, it requires a 4/5 vote. No. Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, stand up, please, for the mic. Whenever you raise your card and I recognize you, please stand so the runner knows where to bring the mic.
Martha Cole, 14 Churchill Street. I'm not sure the numbers in this revision are correct. For example, this paragraph 4 in the original, it says section 4346, but on the view graph, it's 4336.
4336 is the correct one that the Planning Board, the Board of Selectmen want to do.
Okay. And in the end, it's section 4351 to revise 4331 to 4335.
That's also what they want to do. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, they reviewed this.
Yes, thank you. That's a good point, and those are some of the differences. I mean, I didn't bother going through the detail of the differences since this is so different than what's appeared in the warrant. Yes, sir. Try speaking into it. There should be a light that goes on when it's on. Frank, you have a very loud voice. Why don't you just speak up? Yeah, it's gone. Right, we don't. They decided they didn't need that section. All set. Thank you. And I appreciate you not making that a point of order. Okay. Mr. O'Brien.
Yes, Mr. Moderator.
Is the only difference, Jody, between what's up there and what Larry read, the new section, number one? Number two, I meant. Okay, great. So is it okay with you, Mr. O'Brien, that we add to your motion the line that now is on the view graph that says, number two shall be deleted in its entirety?
Yes, it is, Mr. Moderator.
And the person who seconded it over here, Kirsten Rupeni, is that okay with you? Great. Mr. Kosar, before we even go on, is that okay with you? That seems to do what you wanted to do? Wonderful. Okay. Does the motion that's up in the view graph receive a second? It does. Anybody wish to speak to the motion that's now on the view graph? I see. Yes, sir. You want to stand up, please? If you can bring the mic to the front here, over here, and just pass it to that gentleman.
Adam Miller, Knobscott Road. I just would like to know, are there school properties which aren't adjacent to school buildings that are under control of the school committee,
all,
I guess?
All school properties have school buildings on them.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard before we vote? Please stand, and the mic is back there.
Danny Bellum, 28 Maple Avenue. If you delete number two, do all the numbers ratchet up?
Jody, if we add that new, the numbers still line up in the zoning bylaw. Did everybody hear that?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard before we vote on Article 21? I see none. All those in favor, it's a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the motion, pin the view graph, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes by well over two-thirds. We're going on to 22. No, we're not. It's been withdrawn. We're going on to 23. There's another zoning amendment. This one's a little simpler. Ms. Cadillac.
We can only hope. Move in the words of the article.
Receive a second. It does. Ms. Cadillac.
Good evening. Jody Cadillac speaking on behalf of the planning board, who is the proponent of this article. If we could put the map up. Thank you. This article seeks to expand the types of uses that can be located on parcels of land which are zoned industrial or limited industrial. Those are just two of the eight or so zoning districts that we have in town. And the location of these districts are generally shown on this map in brown, which is the Chiswick Park Raytheon area, magenta, which is a single parcel owned by Methods Machines, and light green, which is the Union Avenue Station Road area, as well as the BMW dealership, the Lewis Welding area, and the Bossy Sports and the Boston Edison area, this whole area here along Route 20. Those are all the areas that are industrial or limited industrial that this zoning amendment pertains to. There are approximately 40 parcels that this revision will affect, or approximately 12% of all our commercial properties in Sudbury. It's fairly minor. These properties, for the most part, all have existing buildings on them as well and are just as suitable for retail business as they are for industrial uses. And I guess I should back up, assuming that everyone has read what this is doing. But this is adding the use of retail to be allowed in industrial districts and limited industrial districts. Currently, right now, those are prohibited uses in those two districts. The reason for expanding this is we've seen a couple of different circumstances where retail uses have tried to locate in industrial districts, and that is a prohibited use. And given the economic downturn, vacancy rates are higher than normal for Sudbury right now, and expanding the types of uses that can locate on these properties will enable the commercial property owners to offer leases to a larger range of businesses without negative consequences. That's generally the feeling of the planning board. If we can go to the next slide. This is a slide of one of our pages of the zoning bylaw. It's the use table, and it shows retail use in green. Currently, it's no in the industrial and limited industrial district, and we are proposing that that be changed to yes. No means prohibited. Yes means allowed. Current uses allowed in the industrial and limited industrial districts, and you can see some of these on the screen, include typical businesses, kennels, funeral homes, adult daycare facilities, bed and breakfast establishments, motels, restaurants, offices, bank, recreation, private clubs and lodges, and some traditional industrial uses, clearly, such as auto sales and service, manufacturing, warehouses, and lumber yards, but not retail. It's a use that's not allowed. Again, the revision will just change that N on the use table to Y for retail use in just these two districts. Some of these properties already contain retail uses, and I'm going to choose one, which is a property that has come up time and again. That's 81 Union Avenue. Which is where Especially for Pets used to be located and is now the New England Garden Ornaments. That site had traditionally been retail. The carpet carousel was there as well. And those two older uses operated under older special permits and provided no flexibility when the tenants left and a new retail use wanted to move in. So the new store there did receive a use variance from the zoning board. It's not always easy to receive use variances, and that's really not the way that we would prefer. We would prefer that we, at town meeting, took a conscious vote to allow specific uses in these districts. This article will do that and will allow the property owners to lease their properties to a larger audience of tenants and will keep the commercial properties more viable during downturns in the economy. And the Planning Board urges your support. Thank you.
Ms. Cadillac?
Yes.
Am I correct in assuming that if this passes and there's a retail use that wants to go into an industrial or a limited industrial zone as of right, they still have to go to the selectman and get a site plan special permit?
That's correct.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Bob Hardy for the selectman?
Board of Selectmen support this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 23? Yes, sir. Stand.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. It appears that the effect of this article is to pretty much blur the distinction between industrial districts and retail districts. And I guess I'm curious as to why that distinction was there in the first place. For example, are there envisioned that there are differences with respect, say, to parking or pedestrian safety or snow plowing or some other thing that you would expect to be more lenient in an industrial district than in a retail district? And are we rushing into something that we may not fully understand? I'm not opposed to this, but you got to wonder why these districts were different in the first place if we're saying now that because there's an economic downturn, it really doesn't matter.
Thank you. That's a good question, and I've actually had a fairly standard answer to questions such as that. We have made some small changes to our use table over the years. I've been up here many, many times, and there really isn't. Traditionally, though, zoning is less restrictive as your land uses become more undesirable, and industrial being a more undesirable land use, it's kind of a pyramidal structure. So you actually have fewer uses allowed in your districts that you think are undesirable, such as industrial. So you have only a few districts in town that allow warehouses and lumber yards and manufacturing. And then typically you expand your uses as you go to business. That's your next less restrictive use. And then you go to residential. But in the business district really is really all I'm talking about. So whereas you wouldn't want manufacturing in all of your business and limited business districts, it's okay to have the retail in the more in the industrial districts. That's kind of a theoretical planning answer. I'm not sure it answers your question, but there really is nothing. We have many small storefronts in these industrial districts, such as the buildings on Union Avenue, like I just mentioned, that are perfectly appropriate for retail uses. They all do need the same type of site plan review that any commercial use goes through if they want to locate there. So I don't think the planning board feels that this is opening up any large can of worms. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 23? I see no one. This is a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the motion on the view graph, signify by raising your card. Those opposed? It looks like a unanimous vote. We'll move on to Article 24, which we won't. That's been withdrawn. Article 25 is the dissolving of the Permanent Landscape Committee. It was on the consent calendar and was pulled. We will have Bob Hardy, selectman, make the motion.
Move in the words of the article.
I receive a second. It does. Mr. Hardy.
I'd like to ask Deborah Kruskal, member of the Permanent Landscape Committee, to join me as part of this presentation. Also thank Deborah Kruskal for her years of service on the Permanent Landscape Committee. The selectmen proposed to dissolve this committee for two reasons. First, the committee has not met in several years, and we were asked to bring this to town meeting by a member of the Permanent Landscape Committee for reasons that she can explain in a few minutes. Secondly, the responsibilities it was given when first established are now handled by other entities. As noted in our warrant report, protecting shade trees is now covered by Article 8B of the town bylaws, as well as Mass General Laws Chapter 87. And the planning board and the tree warden have the responsibility under these provisions. Developing landscaping plans for public buildings is now overseen by the Design Review Board. This proposal to dissolve this committee has been endorsed by the various entities who were either designated as members of this committee or who appointed people to it. This includes the tree warden, the Sudbury Public School Committee, the Conservation Commission, and the Planning Board. Further, the three remaining members of the committee have given us their approval, Deborah Kruskal, June Allen, and Scott Taylor. There is one task that was taken on by members of the Permanent Landscape Committee on a voluntary basis, though it is not and has not been an official part of their duties, and that is the landscaping of the traffic islands in town. The selectmen would like to take the opportunity to recognize and thank the former members of this committee for their dedicated service to the town. And we would particularly like to thank June Allen and Paul Cavicchio for their work in making our traffic islands so beautiful. Paul provides the flowers and plants, and June has been coordinating the volunteers who adopt the various islands. We also like to thank the members of Sudbury's Garden Clubs who work on the traffic islands as well. The selectmen will look at alternatives for continuing the work of the volunteers who have made the traffic islands so beautiful after town meeting. We are looking at designating one or more people to serve as coordinators for the volunteers who enjoy doing this work. We would rather approach it this way than avoid creating a committee that would have to develop agendas, post minutes, etc.
I'm Deborah Kruskal, 136 Lincoln Road. I've been on the Permanent Landscape Committee since 1994, and at this time am the only remaining active member of the committee. I support the decision to dissolve the committee. I feel that a committee structure is not the best way to address the issues that have come before us. This committee does not have regular business for discussion, and we do not have set meeting times. Rather, we are called upon when the town needs to address a particular situation. This happens less than two or three times a year and often requires a quick response. It has always been difficult to arrange a meeting for five people with such short notice and difficult to fully involve all the members of the committee. Since I have been the only member with professional status and have the broadest expertise, I have usually been the one to make recommendations and have to ask the rest of the committee to trust me. This does not feel like a committee to me, and I end up feeling awkward about it. The charter states that the duties as, one, recommending the ways to preserve shade trees, and two, to recommend suitable plantings on town-owned property. As for the first duty, the town has a tree warden who is well qualified to do this job. As for the second, I believe this duty was conceived of in simple terms, where to plant bulbs and to recommend a few shrubs. However, the parameters widened during the 90s when there was considerable building. Nixon, Loring, Curtis, the library, the firehouse, a new DPW, and finally the high school. In some cases, we were asked to come up with a complete planting plan, the Nixon School, for instance, in 1996. I do not feel it is right, however, for a committee to undertake the responsibility of designing a planting plan of this magnitude. It places the burden on the professional members of the committee, and it requires, it requires designing by committee, a process that often fails. I feel that a planning plan should be provided by an outside source and then approved by us. And in fact, we acted in this capacity for some of the buildings, such as Curtis and the high school. However, these plans were already reviewed by the Conservation Commission and or the Design Review Board. They didn't need a third committee to review them, particularly since I am also on the Design Review Board. As for the occasional times when the town needs some advice, I would be happy to share my knowledge when requested, but I do not see a need for a five-person committee to act in this capacity. The one area of responsibility that the committee added in the mid-90s I do feel needs to be continued, and that is managing the traffic islands. And as Selectman Hardy said, this could simply be done by appointing a coordinator who could recruit and manage volunteers to plant and maintain the containers in the beds. And I also would like to add my great appreciation to June Allen for all the work that she's done and for being chair of this committee for all these years. Thank you.
Thank you. We got a second. Jamie Gossel, Finance Committee.
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Takes no position. And Mr. Hardy, did you say what the position of the Board of Selectmen was?
Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 25? The reason this was pulled because the person had a question, why is it being dissolved? And I believe you now have the answer. Anybody else wish to be heard? Anyone wish to be heard on Article 25? Seeing none, all those in favor, raise your cards. Those opposed, it passes unanimously. Moving on to Article 26, which is a two-thirds vote.
Waiting for you, Mr. Moderator. Moving the words of the article.
Can I receive a second? It does. So, Ryan?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This is an article that we're bringing back this year, or that we're bringing this year, because back in 2009, not that you would recall, but Articles 16 and 17, which involved these two parcels of land here on Hudson Road and Pinewood Road were indefinitely postponed. At the time, the two parcels were being considered as part of an overall search for sites that might be potentially useful for affordable housing development. They are two parcels that were acquired by the town in tax takings, one dating back to 1932 for Pinewood and one dating back to 1977 for Hudson Road. The parcels are relatively small, under 5,000 square feet, and there was a very strong interest expressed by the abutters of the parcels to be allowed to purchase them from the town. Upon the IP and then further examination, it was decided that this would be an appropriate action to take, and the Board of Selectmen has brought this article this year, and we are going to put the parcels up for bid, requiring a minimum bid of $3,500. We're going to tie some restrictions to the parcels so that anyone that would be the purchaser, and we believe that the most likely purchasers would be the direct abutters, would be able to construct accessory structures, meaning a garage, or maybe a tool shed, or maybe a small expansion to the existing home, but in no way would they be able to develop another freestanding home on these parcels. It would just essentially be an addition, an expansion of their existing lot, and it would be integrated in to then create one total lot. Beyond that, beyond the restrictions and the minimum bid of $3,500, which was set by the Board of Selectmen, we think that this is an appropriate way to remove these, generate some revenue for the town, and remove these parcels from the town's possession where they're currently unproductive. And we urge your support. Thank you.
Two questions, Mr. O'Brien. Is it a total of $3,500 for both, or $3,500
each? $3,500
each. Okay. Maybe we can make that a little clearer. Can we see the motion, please? Are they next to each other, or on either side?
No, one is on Pinewood, one is on Hudson.
Yeah, I think, well, let me ask the question. Can we see the motion? Well, it's here in the warrant. So actually, the deed. Why don't we add the word after the word, if you want to take a look at the warrant. Town Council maybe can take a look also. After the word, the following described lands, comma, each for a sum of not less than $3,500. Is that all right with you?
Perfectly fine.
Council? Great. So you want to change your motion to include that word?
Absolutely, Mr. Moderator.
And who gave it a second? That's okay with you? Wonderful. So we now have that. And let's hear from, does the Finance Committee have an opinion?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Recommends approval. And Mr. O'Brien, I assume the Board of Selectmen supports this?
Unanimously, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 26, signify by raising your card. Could you please stand?
Rick John? Working. Hello?
Could you bring your mic over there?
Rick Johnson, 38 Van Road. Mr. O'Brien, could you just tell us where you came up with the $3,500? Because I assume an acre of property in Sudbury is worth $250,000, and if these parcels are one-eighth of that, I figure they might be worth $30,000. So could you just tell us where you came up with $3,500, please?
It was essentially some analysis done by the assessor's office, the fact that the lots are unbuildable, and really the only available use would be to blend them into the existing lots. They don't really carry a full saleable value with them. So the determination was to set a minimum bid amount of $3,500. We also were given a substantial amount of research that was done by one of the abutters at a Board of Selectmen's meeting probably about 6 weeks back, I would think, that also analyzed numerous parcels of similar size and value, and we took all of that into consideration.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 26? I see no others. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed?
Thank you.
It's a unanimous vote. Thank you. Article 27, another two-thirds vote. And John Drabinski for the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move in the words of the article.
Receive a second? It does. Mr. Drabinski?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Article 27 presents the town with a unique opportunity to increase the size of Newtown Cemetery at no cost to taxpayers. The town, through the Director of Public Works, has been working on details of Article 27 for many years. The subject has been broached nearly two decades ago, excuse me, when cemetery land was already becoming very scarce in the town of Sudbury, and the owners of land agreed in concept to a transfer. Now that the details of the arrangement have been worked out, it's time for town meeting to vote to accept this proposal. This article will allow the selectmen to swap approximately 1 acre of land the town currently owns along the perimeter of Newtown Cemetery, containing unusual topography, with 2 acres of land which will be suitable for cemetery use. This will be the only opportunity for the town to receive this land at no cost. The owners of Parcel 1A, as shown on page 19 in the warrant, desire to access their landlocked parcel labeled as JOC Trust. The town's land is their only opportunity to access this parcel, as no other alternatives exist through litigation. The one-acre parcel will be developed as joint access for both the JOC Trust and the backside of the cemetery. The parcel will be transferred to JOC Trust, and access agreement will be granted for town use. The town will not be required to maintain this way. The development of the JOC Trust property will be subject to receiving subdivision approval from the Sudbury Planning Board at a future date. The access strip accommodates design for one road right away and will seek approval as such. It has been drawn to meet the town's regulation governing subdivisions. The JOC Trust parcel, while oversized at approximately 9 acres, will be limited to one residential lot due to the length of the road and the amount of frontage being created. Any future development of parcel will be subject to planning board approval and extension right away. We urge your support to obtain this needed expansion for cemetery use in Sudbury, and the Board of Selectmen unanimously support the article. Thank you very much.
Jamie Gossel, Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Jamie, if you could get closer to the mic and speak a little louder.
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 27? I see. Yes, could you stand up, please?
I'm Rebecca Chisow, Whitehill Lane.
You need to put the mic closer to your mouth.
I'm sorry. My name is Rebecca Chisow, and I'm on Whitehill Lane. I pass Concord Road where the hill at Newtown Cemetery is every day. And as a matter of fact, my daughter is buried on that hill overlooking noise. I remember that there used to be ferns, a wetland, beautiful rocks, but I woke up one morning and it was all torn up. It was too late to do anything. There's still no road there. So I don't understand why you're moving to buy more and more when you haven't finished what you originally had it already. I mean, you're planning to make more things, which I understand, you know, that space will be required. But at the same time, you know, when will that be completed? I was told, don't worry, you'll like it. And it's still gravel road, so and it can't be used. So I'm sorry, I don't mean to be pert. However, it makes more sense to me to finish something that's already started versus going and spending more money to buy things because you haven't finished what's at the back door. Why buy things at the front door? You know, I just am wondering, when would that be finished and how will you have the capacity and the funding to do that work as well as buy these other things?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Does anybody have an answer to the question about when the work would be finished on this other area in the cemetery approximately?
Ms. Moderator, first point, we definitely need the cemetery space for use in the town. And then the approval of the construction of the access to the back parcel will go through the planning board process, and not being a member of the planning board, but I'm assuming that the planning board would require the applicant to upgrade the access road so they could get access to the back parcel, at the same time allow public safety vehicles access, also allow us to have access to the back parcel that we use for cemetery space.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 27? I see no one else. All those in favor, it's a two-thirds vote. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it's a unanimous vote. We're now on to Article 28, which is the beginning of the community CPC funds, community preservation funds. Mr. Morley, just so everyone understands, our tradition is, since the CPC has 5 or 6 articles here, on the very first article, Mr. Morley explains about the CPC, and sometimes it can go more than 10 minutes instead of
him talking on each article. We'll have different folks talking on those articles, so I've given him permission to do that. So, Mr. Morley, go ahead. You know, even having said that, he promises to be brief.
Well,
baby,
I tried. First, I have to do Article 28, correct, Mr. Moderator?
Yeah.
Or are we waiting for that?
Oh,
okay.
Well, do you want to make your usual speech first?
Yes. I thought in the past I moved in the words of the article and then I spoke, but...
Well, go ahead. Why don't you move?
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $16,000 appropriated.
Okay. Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley.
Okay. Thank you.
And now are you speaking to the motion or just generally first?
Just generally covering the motion and the other following articles.
Anyone else going to speak to this motion?
Yes.
And he's going to be very brief.
Yes.
Okay.
So as you said, I'm Chris Morley. I'm an elected member of the Planning Board, and I forgot to get my little control here. Yeah, which one is which? Goes forward. Okay. Sorry. There you can see. An elected member of the Planning Board and the Board's representative to the Community Preservation Committee. And he explained that I do this every year, so I'll skip that part. There is a small brochure, although we were running out, but most of you probably were here the last two nights, so there was a brochure handout which gives the highlights of the information, all of which is available on our website under the Community Preservation Committee and the town's website, and on the in-person, if you want to, at the town's Planning and Community Development Office. The handout hopefully was trying to save me time to cover too much in 5 minutes, although I still feel pressed for time with the moderator over my shoulder here. At this time each year, I do try to remember that every year brings to us people that are either new in town or new to town meeting, and for whom, understandably, the long thread of town doings is not so readily apparent. So I think it's important, beyond the specific brochure factoids, to include some deep background in the presentation. The CPA was crafted as the state legislature's response to a popular 1990s effort in many towns statewide. The aim was to create a stable, ongoing funding mechanism by which cities and towns could steadily acquire as-yet undeveloped land, a mechanism not quite so buffeted by the economic or electoral winds of fortune. What emerged from the state was a stable, ongoing funding mechanism in the four areas that you see here. Hopefully. Nope. Where was I? Oh, back. Sorry. Sorry, I'd already gone there. Some minimum expenditure levels were set and a dedicated funding source for state matching grants was established. So like most legislation, the CPA is a compromise. But it's a compromise that has served Sudbury well for 10 years. For a town approaching its 400th birthday, town-owned historic buildings, ancient cemeteries, and documents are getting the true preservation attention that has been sorely lacking for so long. New playing fields and walkways have made people of all ages healthier, happier, and safer. In response to the state's 40B mandate, scattered site affordable housing, established as preferable to housing projects by town residents, is finally happening. The Affordable Home Ownership Program is saving from the bulldozer ranches and capes that we pass by without notice every day. Too many years of inaction and too little political will in the face of 40B has gifted Sudbury with large condo developments, whose location and dimensions the town had very limited control over. Because of CPA, the day is indeed coming when we can either better shape or even deny 40B projects at our discretion. As for the last of the four areas of CPA, you can see here, hopefully. No, you can't. Oh, I thought I had that slide. Sorry. I'll leave that up. All right. You can't see here, but it's in the brochure. 72% of the funding the town meeting has so far committed has gone to the preservation of open space. Why is that? In part, it's just because it's the most expensive category, more expensive perhaps over time than the CPA program alone will be able to provide for. We preserve open space because we like to live around it, to see it from our cars, either imagine it or experience it close up as a home for other living creatures, and or because we understand its importance to the ecosystem in which we live. Tonight, hopefully, the stunning views from Tippling Rock that this body just 3 years ago preserved for the public forever will be joined in perpetual public enjoyment by the equally stunning views from the top of Fairbank Farm on Old Sudbury Road. Open space sounds great, doesn't it? It is great. But there is a strong self-interest, even closer to home, one in which open space is better known as undeveloped house lots. We know that in our town, more development means more school children, and more school children means, at the margins, more operating expense, and with increasing numbers, more very expensive school buildings. New construction homes bring young families, and only the very largest of these homes are net positive to the town tax-wise, and then only for a limited number of years. The high property values that we've enjoyed in Sudbury are hugely dependent upon the perceived quality of our school systems, but the expense of those systems is straining our ability to pay. We aim over time through the CPA to prevent the creation of as many as 1,000 new house lots. One more minute, Mr. Moderator?
Yes.
I got confused with the stuff on the board there.
No, that was actually the bell for the 5 minutes.
I was hoping to keep it under 5 minutes. A quick word about CPA state matching funds. To date, we've received from the state $7.7 million to spend on projects that we have chosen or will someday choose to be a part of our CPA program here in Sudbury. The CPC and this body began with the knowledge that open space land purchases are a priority and expensive, that the number and timing of those purchases would be uncertain, and that state matching funds would over time decline from a 100% match as other towns eagerly joined the program. So we, meaning us here together in town meeting, planned ahead and set aside and invested funds for the future, mostly for the purchase of open space land. You could think of it as the state having provided all of the almost $7 million that we currently have invested. Tonight, for example, the entire purchase price of the development rights to Fairbank Farm will come from the state-provided kitty. Go back to some pretty views. That's Tippling Rock, by the way, the view from Tippling Rock. The tax savings brought about by conserving land will benefit Sudbury taxpayers in perpetuity, a truly enormous savings. Of course, there is a cost to all of us right now, though we try through bonding to spread the expense out over 20 years and therefore over different taxpayers. But all of the CPA program in Sudbury, the land, the historic assets, the community housing and recreational projects are future-oriented. This is not a what's-in-it-for-me program, though certainly some benefits are more immediate. This is a legacy effort for the future of our town. The fields and forests that I grew up in, playing in, through which my children roamed, the quality schools that we were privileged to experience, that you and your families have also experienced your share of. Their survival in recognizable form depends in significant part upon the saving and funding mechanism provided by the CPA in Sudbury. I have failed in the past and wanted to make it a point tonight to thank town staff and the numerous volunteer committees over the years whose work product really informs the work of the CPC, and to thank the voters at the polls originally, at 9 town meetings, and here in this hall tonight. Their willingness and your willingness tonight to sacrifice a little bit for the greater good of this community is admirable, it is meaningful, and it is appreciated. Now we can do Article 28. And that would be Frank Lyons, president of the Hopbrook Protection Association.
My name is Frank Lyons, and I live at 157 Wayside Inn Road. The next slide, please. Okay. Carding Mill Pond is the pond that we're looking to get this money to harvest. It's a 41-acre pond. It's the largest pond in the Hopbrook system in Sudbury. And we have been harvesting this thing continuously since 2004. We actually harvested it a couple of times before that. And the reason that we're looking for some money this evening to continue harvesting is that ultimately we're going to be looking for a long-term solution, which will involve probably dredging. But in the meantime, if we stop harvesting, the stuff grows back pretty quickly. Could you, next slide, please, Mark. That's what it looked like before we started. And as you see, there's no water, no open water there. It's, it's all plants. And if you have the next slide, please, Mark. And after harvesting, this is what it should look like. This is a little bit misleading because there are parts of the pond where the harvester won't go, and you'll see the harvester in a minute, And the reason the harvester won't go there is because the pond's too shallow. Next slide, please. There are a couple ways you can harvest. And one way is to just call up a harvesting company and write a check. We didn't do that. We borrowed a harvester from Fish and Wildlife, and we hired a harvest driver, and we got a lot of help from the town of Sudbury. The DPW hauled the stuff away. We took the biomass that we got, and we've given it to farmers, local farmers. We've had it tested for properties that would see what kind of fertilizer it might be. We had it tested for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash by from students from Assumption College, and it turns out that it's a very good fertilizer. We gave some of it, depending on the year, to local farmers, Bill Stone and Bill Fairbank. We sent it over to Eastley Farm in Framingham, and more recently we have a garlic farmer on the field right next to the pond. Next slide, please. So I said there's two ways of doing it. One way is to go hire somebody to do it. Herd Pond and Whalen, they did that, and it cost them around a million dollars to write a check to pay somebody to do it. We did it for considerably less. 5 years ago, we came to town meeting and asked for $40,000. That was $8,000 a year for five years. And we accomplished quite a bit with that. Next slide, please. That's the harvester on the pond. Next slide. That's Bill Fairbank there, one of the farmers that we gave the biomass to, along with Chris Wilson, the person we hired to drive the harvester. Next slide, please. And this is really the last slide. When we got our $32,000, it was $8,000 a year, and our cost varied, and the main variable in our cost was the maintenance of the harvester. There are three people that use the harvester every summer. It's Fish and Wildlife, who own the harvester, the town of Concord, and the Hop Brook Protection Association. One year, there was a lot of work that needed to be done on the harvester, and our expenses were over $10,000. We made up the difference between the $8,000 and the $10,500 or whatever. But on average, we spent less than $8,000 a year during those 5 years, and we returned $7,460 to the town. So basically, if you factor in the money that we returned from our last request, we're looking for like another $8,500 to keep the Carding Mill Pond in good condition until we can implement a permanent solution. And the next slide, you can forget about that. That's our recruiting poster, and it hadn't been very effective. So are there any questions? That's hydrodictyon, by the way. That green stuff is one of the – there are four major plants in this biomass, hydrodictyon and lemna. Lemna is a floating little bits, you know, the duckweed. And then there's water chestnut and Elodia canadensis. Those are the major. So are there any questions?
That's actually my job, Frank.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll stay here in case there are.
Okay. Jamie Gossels for the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
John Drabinski, Board of Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 28, the $16,000? Yes, ma'am. Can you stand up? Yeah, that's right in front will be good.
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. I actually support the idea of the article. I guess I just have a problem with, under the Community Preservation Act, allocating this to the acquisition and preservation of open space. This seems like this is actually more of a recreational thing. And so I hope that it could be accommodated under recreation. But I don't see how this is the acquisition or preservation of open space.
Thank you. Frank, maybe Chris will take that. Okay.
Restoration of habitat is an approved use of CPA funds. It's not a recreational facility.
Thank you.
If I could add an additional comment. Before we started harvesting this, there were no waterfowl, and there was fish kill along the edges of the pond. And so now, after we've been harvesting this, the geese and the ducks and the swans are back, and they're fishing the pond. So it has made a significant difference for habitat.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 28? Please stand.
Susan Levitz, 199 Concord Road. I'm just curious, you made a comment about a permanent solution of dredging, and I was just wondering what that would be or how much that would cost. And since you've been harvesting over so many years, could we just get some figures on what it would be to permanently solve the problem?
We won't be able to answer that question until we decide how we're going to dredge it. There are two dredging techniques. One of them is you go basically suck up the mud, and the other one is to drain maybe half the pond and go in there with earth removal equipment and take it away. And the Hopbrook Protection Association has some money now that we're in the process of looking into dredging options. You know, they're not going to be cheap. They can run into the millions of dollars.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 28? Yes, could you stand, please?
Steve Gabler, 28 Mossman Road. I'm speaking as the chair of the Town Ponds and Waterways Committee. Our committee has studied and monitored the problems of excess nutrients and invasive species in Hop Brook and its associated ponds for the last 6 years. The problems are not unique to Sudbury, and many towns have similar experiences, as was reported during a recent water quality roundtable at Great Meadows in Sudbury. Mechanical harvesting of water chestnuts has resulted in significant reductions in the volume harvested and the cost year to year. Rebound of the volume of harvesting is suspended is also rapid. The continuation of these harvesting efforts is not expected to be indefinite. The EPA has issued a discharge permit for the Marlboro Easterly Sewage Treatment Plan that mandates a large reduction in the phosphorus levels discharged into Hop Brook. This has been a long process, but the technology has been identified and plans are being made. Until that reduction is realized, the PWC believes that it is prudent and cost-effective to maintain the early harvesting and has voted unanimously to support this article. We would also like to thank Fish and Wildlife for making the funny-looking orange machine available, and to Hop Brook Protection Association for a lot of effort over a lot of years.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 28? I see no one. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? It is a unanimous vote. Mr. Morley for a motion on the Article 29.
Move in the words of the article with a sum of $117,000 appropriated.
That receive a second. It does. Rosemary Harvell, town clerk, for a presentation.
Thank you. I'm very happy to have the opportunity to present Article 29. And as you are aware, this is the fourth time I've come before you, permanent records are by their nature of historical and cultural importance to the town. And Sudbury residents have affirmed their commitment to the preservation of these historic resources at annual town meetings. First, in 2008, the town meeting voted to conduct a preservation survey of the town hall, and that included an inspection of the building itself and the roof and store where the records and artifacts are stored within the building, the manner that they're stored, and also the environment where they were stored in the vaults and in elsewhere in filing cabinets and so forth. In 2009, town meeting voted to appropriate funds for the repair, treatment, preservation, and digitizing of 19 volumes of ancient town records. Actually, it was 17, but we managed within that budget to actually preserve 19. And last year, 2010, town meeting voted to appropriate funds for climate control for the two small vaults that are in the town hall currently. And that work is scheduled to begin in the middle of next month. The town of Sudbury is very fortunate that from the very beginning, town officials carefully recorded the activities and official acts of the town and its residents and took great care to preserve the records that were created. Sudbury has an unbroken chain of historic records dating back to 1638, and that's very unusual. The ancient records survived the fire on February 5th, 1930, when the town hall burned to the ground. Sudbury is rightfully proud of its history of protecting the town records. As records custodians, town clerks are mandated to protect the municipal records from fire, flood, vandalism, theft, and environmental damage. Sudbury is in the process of providing the treatment, restoration, conservation, and digitization for many of our historic records. This article, submitted by the Community Preservation Committee, if passed, would provide funds for repair, stabilization, conservation, and archival quality storage boxes for at least 22 additional historic documents. And they date from the 18th, 19th, and early 20th century. I brought some, and most of you have probably seen some of these before, but these are images of Sudbury's ancient town records actually undergoing treatment, conservation, rebinding, and some examples of the digital images. So, okay, can you go back? Okay, these are some of our records actually being washed. And then the next one of our records books that was when it was being rebound. These are three of the volumes that were completed. And then these are some of the digital images, although these are put into a PowerPoint, so when they're actually on the computer, they're very clear as if you're really looking at the book itself. And you could just flip through these. So they're identified at the top of the page. So these have been restored, and we have them in our vault. Okay, the town clerk's office and the Goodnell Library trustees are working with Sudbury's Director of Information Technology, that's Mark Thompson, to make the digital images and the transcriptions of these documents available for research at the Goodnell Library, and selected documents and pages and transcriptions will also be available on the Sudbury Archives on the town website. The Goodnell Library trustees have let me know that they support this article. Continuing the project that we've begun will restore, preserve, protect, and conserve unique historic town documents that are seriously threatened. The scanning of these documents will provide expanded public access to the information that's contained within them and allow the public to experience the historic manuscripts without causing any further destruction or damage to the original writings. This is a list. We have very detailed appraisals of the treatments that are needed. But this is just a list of the documents that we're looking to conserve this year. All of them are permanent records, and all of them except for there's one that doesn't actually need to be restored. It just needs the archival box and to be digitized. Okay, this next slide shows, I'm going to show you some of the records. I've taken pictures, and I'm not a very good photographer, so you'll have to forgive me. Of some samples of the books. This is a tax list. It's from 1825 to 1830. And the next one is another page from the book. The third one, we have assessor's book records. It's from 1791 to 1805, and this shows the North Ward invoice. The next one is the next year, and it's a South Ward invoice from the assessor's. And this was an envelope, a manila envelope that was in our vault. And it had contained loose paper, somewhat bound, partially bound. And it was given by, it was donated to the town. And it's a sermon, it has a sermon book, and it's from 1728 to 1742, and some of them 43. And they're mostly church meeting records and sermon book. This is what was inside. And you can see that it really is in need of restoration. Now the next slide, papers from Peter Noyes. And on this first page, you can see that what this is a covenant where Peter Noyes was giving land to Thomas Clinton. And it's signed here actually by the town clerk at that time as a true copy attest. And the town clerk's name was Noah Clapp. And that was on September 26, 1649. And this was bound into a book. And you can see that it's very loose. And there's a note here from Betsy Powers regarding it. And what she says in there is that it was told to her that these were original, this is an original book that was from the Goodnow Library, but she hadn't found any evidence, hadn't been able to prove that, so she did not give it up. These are actual pictures of more of that book. And that one as well. And that's the last one. And then another of the books that I chose to photograph, it's the Town of Sudbury School Committee records from 1890 to 1923. And again, you'll have to forgive me. I'm not a very good photographer, especially. I stood on a chair, but this is about as good as I got. But I can tell you a little bit about what I found that was interesting on a couple of the pages there. For instance, everything was very carefully written down, and most of these that I'm going to point out to you were from George E. Harrington, the secretary of the Sudbury School Committee. And the first one I thought was of interest was on March 27, 1894. And the reason I found that very interesting, it was because it was the first time that the school committee had voted to give diplomas to the students of the high school who had successfully completed 3 years' work of regular courses. And on that same day, they also voted that all the schools in the town should donate a whole or a portion of the afternoon of April 18th to exercises intended to create renewed interest among the pupils in the lessons of patriotism taught by the 19th of April, the new holiday in our state. So it was the first year that they celebrated that. I found that very interesting. Now, 2 months later, the school committee met on May 22nd of 1894, and their first vote on that meeting was to hold the first graduating exercises of the Sudbury High School 3 years course on Thursday evening, June 7th, in Music Hall. The second vote of that evening was to purchase of the Strawbridge Lithographing Company of Cincinnati, Ohio, 25 copies of a high school diploma, and further to instruct the secretary of the school committee to procure these diplomas. Later that year, and this was very important to Miss Grace B. Parker, they voted to increase her salary, $1 per week, commencing with the winter term of that year, and to increase the salary of Miss Perry, 50 cents per week, the same as above time specified. At that same meeting, they voted to increase the amount of blackboard surface in the high school room.
Rosemary?
Yes.
That's the 10-minute number. You all set?
Want to say one more thing.
Go right ahead.
And that is to let you know that this project will provide as much permanent protection as possible for the repair and preservation of the historic records, and also custom archival boxes for each volume specifically for that volume to prevent damage from handling. And this continues the restoration, preservation, and conservation needed to protect and greater provide public access to these unique and irreplaceable historic resources. And I ask for your support of this article. Thank you.
Finance Committee, Bill Nealon, have you calculated the late fee to the Goodnow Library yet?
No. The Finance Committee supports this article.
John Dubinsky, Board of Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen, you unanimously support this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 29? All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? It's a unanimous vote. Thank you. We're now on to Article 30, Community Preservation Funds, Historic Projects. Mr. Morley for motion.
Move in the words of the article with a sum of $37,000 appropriated.
Did we receive a second? It does. Mr. Jim Hill from the Historic Commission will give the presentation.
James Hill, 199 Concord Road. I'm the vice chair of the Sudbury Historical Commission. For those of you not familiar with the commission, it's a complete volunteer commission. We're also supported by a few dozen other volunteers, which we appreciate. The project, we brought four projects for you tonight: restoration of the Hosmer House chimneys, the restore the slate roof at Wadsworth Cemetery Gazebo, install a gravestone at artist Florence Hosmer's gravesite, and remove invasive plant species at the Revolutionary War Cemetery. The Hosmer House chimney restoration. There's four large chimneys. You can see them here. They're in different periods of deterioration right now. We're looking to stabilize, repoint, install appropriate flashing, and resolve the water leakage issues. The restoration of this will be coordinated with the Sudbury Building Inspector's Office, who asked us to look into it in the first place. That project is estimated to cost $30,000. It is a project that will be going out to bid, and hopefully we can bring that in at less money. The next project is the restoration of the Wadsworth Cemetery gazebo. This is right near the, for people that have been in the cemetery, they'll recognize that it's right near the monument, the Wadsworth Monument there. We're only looking to restore portions of the slate roof on the gazebo. As you can see, different parts of it are damaged at this point, and we're currently working with some volunteers to donate the labor to restore other parts of the gazebo, as well as to build benches, to replace benches that used to be in there that are no longer in there. We're anticipating the cost to, again, just repair certain areas of the slate roof to be $2,000. The next project is to install a gravestone for artist Florence Hosmer. Florence Hosmer of Hosmer House Renown had provided traditional gravestones for members of her family at Wadsworth Cemetery. Those are the two stones you can see on the right. Florence's is here on the left. It's actually a footstone, which is to the right of the second gravestone. A little closer look. We're looking to add a gravestone just with Florence's name on it in the exact style as these two gravestones, so just so it'll fit in with the other members of her family. We've gone out and we've gotten estimates of approximately $4,500 to do that. And the last project is to continue removal of invasive plants around the Revolutionary War Cemetery. The group from Sudbury Suite is actually doing the labor on this, as they've done in the past. They've come to us and asked us if we would donate $500 towards the materials that they'll be using to do this. It's a great project to, because they go in with their labor, they take out these plants, and it helps stabilize the stone walls, which keeps us from having to rebuild them more often than necessary. We would appreciate your support of these projects. Thank you very much.
Bill Nealon for the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends support of this article.
John Dubinsky, Board of Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen support.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 30? I see no hands. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? Passes unanimously. We're now on Article 31, Townwide Walkways under CPC.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $100,000 appropriated.
Does that receive a second? Yes, it does. Ms. Kablak for presentation.
Good evening, Jody Kablak, Director of Planning and Community Development. I do have a... No, I don't. Brief presentation. I'm back before you tonight requesting additional funding for the construction of new walkways in town. This request is outside the normal two-year cycle that we have been operating under for about 10 years. The popularity of building walkways in neighborhoods in town has resulted in the need for more funding, and the planning and construction processes that we have in place, working hand-in-hand with the Department of Works, has enabled us to identify needs and build walkways quicker than ever before. Typically, we come in every 2 years for $200,000. This year, we're coming in for $100,000 in a one-year cycle. Over the past several years, walkways have been constructed on many roads: Peckham Road, Maynard Road, Landham Road, Willis Road, Mossman Road, Haynes Road, Raymond Road, Knobscot Road, and the most recent project on North Road. Those of you who live in or near these neighborhoods know firsthand how necessary these walkways were and how the ability to safely move about your neighborhoods has increased since their construction. However, we still aren't done. The 2000 Walkway Master Plan identified at least 13 additional miles of roads that need walkways. And we currently have petitions from residents on Dutton Road, Peckham Road, Powder Mill Road, Marlboro Road, Powers Road, Newbridge Road, Pantry Road, Old Lancaster Road, and Old Framingham Road. The location of where walkways will be constructed, if these funds are approved, has not yet been determined. The funds will be used to further the recommendations of the report of the Walkway Committee, the Walkway Master Plan, and walkways from the list in that report will be examined to determine where the greatest needs are. Considerations such as easements and wetlands impact on whether a walkway can actually be built. Residents who wish their street to be considered should submit a request to the Director of Public Works or to my office. If this article passes, a public forum to discuss and prioritize use of the funds will be scheduled by the Planning Board later this spring so that we can update the list and hear residents' issues. None of this money will be spent on maintaining existing walkways. Walkway maintenance is a funded item in the DPW operating budget. All funds approved under this article will construct new walkway segments as allowed by the Community Preservation Act under the category of creation of recreational areas. I urge your support.
Bill Nealon for the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends support for this article.
John Dubinsky, Board of Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen support this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 31? Yes, could you stand?
Thank you. Rosemary Geary, 32 Old Framingham Road. I was the neighborhood coordinator for submitting the walkway for Old Framingham Road on behalf of the residents at Grouse Hill and Mahoney Farms. I understand that Ms. Kablak referred to our petition as one that is being considered. I would like to know what the timeline would be and how the criteria is set up for selecting among so many worthy walkways that have been put before the committee.
As I did say, if the funds are approved, since last year $200,000 worth of funds were approved, and we did work on the North Road walkway and prioritized all of those funds for that walkway, we're now in a cycle of trying to prioritize additional walkways. So any of the existing petitions that are submitted and meet the criteria in the walkway planning initiative will be considered. And the criteria, that it's listed on the web, we do have the criteria there. It has to do with links to existing walkways so that we're not building just isolated segments of walkways. Certainly we have to make sure that they're buildable in terms of wetlands impacts. Easements are always a consideration. As I mentioned, it's much easier for us to build walkways within the town right-of-way and not have to procure private easements. Convenience walking, so walkways that allow residents to walk to services or schools or recreation areas
or open spaces. Those are the majority of the considerations that we do take into consideration. As I said, the planning board will hold a public forum typically in June, and we will look at the walkway petitions that have been submitted to see which ones are the ones that are ready to advance, and then they'll make a decision, and Bill Place will start working on it.
Thank you. Hang on one second. Is anybody else wish to be heard? Could you stand up, please?
Thank you. Rick Johnson, 38 Bent Road. Last year we approved $200,000 for walkways, and $22,000 of that, 11%, was spent on materials only to put up a couple of beautiful flagstone walls for two homes on North Road. First question, I don't remember approving flagstone walls for anybody. So how did that get done with the CPA funds? Is it allowed to use CPA funds for two flagstone walls for two residents of the town? And third question, will there be any flagstone walls built for anybody else in the coming year with CPA funds? Thank you.
This issue has come up. We've actually analyzed the budget for several of the last few walkways, the North Road walkway, particularly in the Knobscot Road walkway. The walls that Mr. Johnson has referred to are retaining walls, which are routinely built throughout the town. I'm sure anyone who drives around has seen retaining walls built on many properties. The town uses them to retain soil when there is either a grade issue or there's just a change in topography from where the level of the walkway needs to be to where the topography of the adjacent property is. They're routinely built everywhere. What we have analyzed in the budget for the two most recent walkways is that approximately 12 to 15% of the entire budget is spent on the final restoration of the area. So the North Road walkway is approximately 1 mile of walkway. That included all the loaming and seeding of shoulders, landscaping that was needed in areas where trees were removed. Some properties received fencing that was replaced during the construction, and some areas have fieldstone retaining walls. So Bill Place and I have looked at that budget. We do think that that is an appropriate amount for restoration of a full mile-long area of walkway. Town meeting does not approve the line item costs of these projects. The DPW director manages and does all of that accounting.
Thank you. Hang on. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31?
Follow up.
No, please sit down. Please sit down. This woman was before you. Could you stand, please? Could you wait for a mic?
Rosemary Geary again. Just a point of clarification for me. Do I understand that no decision has been made yet on which walkways will be considered for funding for the coming year?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. John. She had a follow-up question on hers, and I called on you instead. Now I'm calling on you again.
Fox. My question didn't get answered. The second question about an appropriate use of CPA funds for flagstone walls. You can put up shrubs. You can put up little boulders. We got beautiful flagstone walls put up with CPA funds. Is that an appropriate use of funds? And do we see these beautiful flagstone retaining walls being put up for other residents on CPA funds?
Mr. Morley?
I actually live on the first walkway built in town, I believe, Old Lancaster Road and Beacon Road, when I was quite young, so eons ago. And I have a giant retaining wall on one of mine, and I have a row of hemlock trees that were hemlock bushes that the town put in at that time. And that is all part of the construction of walkways in town. At the time when they first started walkways, and I just heard someone mentioned it last night, we don't want sidewalks in Sudbury, and Bill has built a few that he and I argue about, but we want walkways, and sometimes walkways involve grading issues, stone walls, trees, and bushes, and it's all part of the construction cost of building a walkway.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? I see no one. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed?
It's just there's a couple votes in opposition, and everyone else voted in favor. It's well more than a majority. Article 32, Sudbury Housing Trust allocation, CPC.
Move in the words of the article with the amount of $190,000 appropriated.
Does that receive a second? It does. Lydia Pasterzik, is that correct? Of the Sudbury Housing Trust trustee will make the presentation.
I'm Lydia Pastuzik, 15 Griffin Lane, and I'm a member of the Sudbury Housing Trust. Article 32 asks for the 10% allocation for the Sudbury Housing Trust to provide affordable housing to the residents of the town. Town meeting in 2006 first authorized the creation of the Housing Trust. It was designed to promote home ownership, and at the time there was really no housing that was in the affordable category that was owned. Only rental housing existed. So town meeting has funded us for 4 years, and we're here to seek funds to continue. As has been discussed earlier by Mr. Morley, 10% of the CPA funds by statute must be spent on housing. So that's what we're looking for. So what have we accomplished over these past 4 years? The trust has created opportunities for home ownership, and we have four programs that I will discuss over the next couple of minutes. But we have created in this past 4 years 14 permanently restricted by deed units of housing. Our plan was to create 14, and we've already constructed 8. 30% of those housing units are owned by town employees, including a firefighter and teachers. And most of the people in those units have some sort of local connection to Sudbury. So let me take you through the four programs. First is small grants, and the small grants program provides grants up to $3,000 for health and safety repairs for income-eligible residents, and that would include seniors as well. And these are repairs that might be electrical, they might be safety handrails. We've had over 40 applicants in 9 different grant cycles, and this is a way to help people in town maintain their homes for safety and health reasons and stay in town. Okay, the condo buy-down program. Now, when 40Bs are proposed in town, we have been able to negotiate that there be additional, above and beyond the 25% of the units, that we be able to offer them as affordable units. The average subsidy is about $112,000. This is negotiated with the developers during the permit process. So we have purchased one condo so far and have 2 when future projects might be built. The third program that we offer is small development projects, and I think many of you are familiar with the Habitat for Humanity project that was completed a couple of years ago. And we've been working since June 2008 to develop further affordable homes on Maynard Road. We were here last year at town meeting talking about that project. And remember, we are part of, the Sudbury Housing Trust is part of the community, and we worked with the neighbors on that project, and that project was scaled down to 3 units, and it has since received its Zoning Board of Appeals permits, and we're moving on that as well. Finally, we have the home preservation program. We have completed 4 purchases of homes that probably otherwise would have been torn down, and these are really solid homes that with some needed repairs could be sold to qualifying homeowners. The average subsidy is about $180,000, and I know we're all concerned about additional students in the schools. These families tend to have a very few students per household. In fact, they're averaging a half a student per household. So we are in the process now of working on a fifth purchase. So Article 32 requests $180,000. This is the 10% mandated allocation for housing, and it's consistent with prior requests. This will allow us to move forward with the small grants program, the home preservation program, and I hope you'll agree that we've accomplished a lot over the last 4 years with the funds that have been given to the Housing Trust. So I urge you to support this article.
Lydia, did you said there was 180,000? I thought the motion was for 190.
It is. Sorry.
Okay. So the last slide should change to 190.
Right.
Okay.
This is our balance sheet that's provided for your information as well. So I heard the beeper go off, so this is just a summary, and we're asking for your support on this article. Thank you.
Bill Nealon, Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends support for this article.
John Dravinsky, Board of Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen support this article.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 32? Yes, sir.
Hi, Rick Johnson, 38 Bent Road. Mr. Brian Semple couldn't be here tonight, so he asked me to ask a question on this. Last year, the Sudbury Housing Trust got their funding by one vote. It was very contentious, and it was due to a 40B development at the corner of Marlboro and Maynard. Since then, there was a statewide citizen-led ballot initiative that a majority of Sudbury residents voted to repeal 40B. The Sudbury Housing Trust, for its part, actively worked to defeat this initiative, actually going on record in a proactive fashion to support 40B. Now, as a town, we are besieged by 40B developments that are being built in accordance with the very law that Sudbury Housing Trust fought to keep. My question for both Sudbury Housing Trust Chairman Michael Fee and the Board of Selectmen rep on that trust, Larry O'Brien, why, as a taxpayer, should I vote to provide you funding when you fought to support the 40B law that a majority of Sudbury residents voted to repeal?
Mr. O'Brien?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I don't believe Mr. Fee is in the hall tonight, so I will answer for myself, but not Mr. Fee. I don't know that I would describe the vote of the Sudbury Housing Trust as fighting for passage of the article. We supported the efforts of various organizations across the state to by endorsing those efforts to promote affordable housing. We believe it is the mission. It is the mission of the Sudbury Housing Trust, and the trustees believe that supporting and developing affordable housing in Sudbury is something that adds to the diversity on a social basis, an economic basis, a cultural basis within Sudbury, and we believe that our support of other organizations that were in favor of keeping 40B as a development tool was the appropriate thing to do.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 32? Rick, just raise your hand. There's no need to yell out, okay? Let me just see if anyone else who hasn't spoken yet wishes to speak. Does anyone else wish to speak on Article 32? Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Semplin had a follow-up question. If a petition to repeal 40B is placed on the ballot by the citizens of the Commonwealth of Mass in the fall...
Rick, you can stop now. It's outside the scope of this article.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 32? Please stand. Can we get a mic up front?
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. Last town meeting, when Michael Fee was here, he said that, in fact, half of the salary for the community housing specialist is paid for out of CPC administrative funds. The other half was paid for by the Sudbury Housing Trust. And so when you're calculating that 10% that's required by statute, you're not calculating the other half that's paid for through the administrative funds. And this is about to get even more complicated from the people who remember the regional housing services thing, where the statement was that the fully loaded cost of the Sudbury housing specialist is paid for through the regional housing services office, which is correct in context. It's correct that 100% of the fully loaded cost of the time that the housing specialist works for the regional housing services office is counted. So for 40% of her time, she's 100% fully loaded, paid for by the regional services office. That other 60% is still going to be paid for by the Sudbury Housing Trust and the Community Preservation Fund through administrator funds. And is there some reason why the Sudbury Housing Trust cannot assume the fully loaded cost of the Sudbury Housing Specialist, who is not, in fact, providing administrative services to the Community Preservation Committee, but is providing community housing services to the Sudbury Housing Trust?
Do we have an answer to that question, please?
The CPC supports the payment that we now pay for best services. She does not spend 100% of her time on the housing trust. And I know in her presentation, she presents she also takes in income as well for the town. So you're right, it is a complicated thing when all the numbers are put together. But and I'm sure it's hard for her to figure out, not hard, but she does wear more than one hat, and she without her, there would be no housing program in town. This body passed, I think, 3 years in a row, a substantial amount of money for housing efforts, community housing efforts, that went nowhere. And then Ms. Russ was hired part-time, and a lot changed. And she would like to come and speak.
Hang on a minute.
Is that possible?
Thank you.
Sorry. I was getting emotional over there.
Beth Russ, can you come forward?
Much better from the horse's mouth.
Yes, thank you, Chris. I'm Beth Russ, 177 Haynes Road. I do support the Housing Trust by administering their programs and some of the activities that Lydia talked to. And also on equal time, I support the housing efforts for the town. And that comes in the form of monitoring the units for the town, of the home ownership units, writing the housing production plan as we're doing now, working with the assessor's office to ensure that the property values for the home ownership units are in line. And for example, the Article 26 for the two parcels of land on Hudson Road and Pinewood, I've been involved with that as well. So the activities do split between town level housing activities and trust program activities.
Yes, ma'am. Could you wait for a mic? Could we get a mic over here, please? Could you stand?
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. I understand that you work for both the town and the Sudbury Housing Trust, but my understanding is that the compensation comes exclusively through the Community Preservation Commission, either through administrative funds or through the Sudbury Housing Trust. Is that correct?
Mr. Moderator, if I can take a shot.
Hang on.
At that.
Mr. O'Brien.
Yeah. The 10% that's being requested that goes to the housing trust. Some of that money is used to compensate Ms. Russ. Ms. Russ also takes some of her time and services and does outside service work at representing the trust that brings in outside revenue that is not related to administrative money from the CPC funds or money that is allocated as part of the 10%. And that is a portion of what also pays her salary is outside income that comes from other communities on a piecemeal basis. Does that answer your question, Pat, in terms of streams of income?
It seems as though all of the compensation comes through either through the program or through the Community Preservation Fund one way or another. And it seems as though there are services performed for the town, but the town is not paying for them. Any payment coming from the town comes by means of the Community Preservation Fund.
Yes. Hang on a second. Why don't we get Ms. Rust here? and get an answer here.
Beth Russ, 177 Haynes Road. As Larry mentioned, the external contracts that are brought into the trust are significant and more than cover the salary expense. This year, the trust will receive in $90,000 of external fees through the efforts that I perform for the trust. So there is significant other funds coming into the trust. So as the CPA funds come in, but it's not all CPA in terms of money coming into the trust.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 32? I see no one. All those in favor of Article 32 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? There are a half a dozen, maybe eight in opposition, and the rest in favor. It passes by well more than a majority. We're now on Article 33, CPC funds, Fairbank Farm Preservation.
Move to appropriate the sum of $750,000 from the Community Preservation Act funds, as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee, for the purchase of development rights in the form of an agricultural preservation restriction or other such restrictions provided under MGL Chapter 184, serving the same or similar purpose. Said appropriation to be allocated to the open space category and funded from unrestricted reserves.
Does that receive a second? It does. Who are we going to have first? Ms. Cadillac?
Thank you. Jody Cadillac speaking on behalf of the Board of Selectmen. Tonight, I'm here to present another unique opportunity for the town of Sudbury to preserve a historic property, the Fairbank Farm. The Fairbank Farm, outlined in red on the map, is a 33-acre farm located on Old Sudbury Road and is a gateway property for the town as visitors enter the town from the east on Route 27. It's a classic New England farm with a large red barn, farm animals, a small farm stand, and stone walls separating the fields. The town has been offered the opportunity to preserve this property by purchasing the development rights from the owner, William Fairbank. Mr. Fairbank is a fifth-generation family farmer of the property and wishes to keep the property in active farming in perpetuity. The mechanism for protection will be the recording of an agricultural preservation restriction or conservation restriction on the property, similar to how we preserve the Cutting Farm and the Knobscot Reservation. The Fairbank Farm, shown here in light red, right there, has been identified on the 2009 Open Space and Recreation Plan, as well as the 2008 Heritage Landscape Inventory and the 2002 Land Use Priorities Report. It's one of the few parcels of land in Sudbury in active agriculture, and if this article passes, will remain so in perpetuity. It abuts the SVT Walbach Farm, through which public access will be created so that residents can admire the view from the top of the farm. The farm is also in close proximity to other town open space, and that's what this slide shows. The pink is the Piper conservation area. The purple is the Walbach Farm. The green is the King Philip area. This area is a conservation restriction, and Great Meadows Wildlife Refuge is all surrounding this property. The frontage of the farm is also within the town's Town Center Historic District. The landowner has offered the town to purchase the development rights at a very favorable price. Due to the establishment of a private deed restriction on a portion of the property, its current fair market value is lower now than it will be when the deed restriction expires in 2014. The current appraisal is based on the value of three large lots with expansive views of the Boston skyline. The property could be developed into anywhere from 10 to 15 lots once the deed restriction expires, which is in 2014, so the time is right. What is being offered is the placement of a permanent restriction governed by Mass General Laws Chapter 184 on 33 acres of land, and the price is $750,000. This expenditure will not increase your taxes or your CPA surcharge. Funds currently allocated to the CPA fund and in reserve for expenditures such as this will be used for the payment. And there are still plenty of funds left in the reserve account for future open space preservation, plus housing and historic preservation. I'm going to go back to the aerial. The APR will guarantee that the land remains in active farming in perpetuity. Bill Fairbank will retain the ownership of the land and can sell the property as a farm in the future if he so chooses. However, the new owner will also be obligated to either farm the land or mow the fields to keep them open. The APR will prohibit residential development with the exception of one house lot that's being reserved for future sale or development. This house lot has been factored into the appraisal and the price. Additionally, other provisions of the restriction will include housing for the farmer or his employees, which is also allowed pursuant to Mass General Laws, Chapter 48, Section 3. And the town cannot forbid or limit the construction of these structures. However, wording in the restriction will require approval by the town for construction of any permanent structures. Additional conditions will be placed on any construction if it is proposed within the historic district. Farming, soil and vegetation removal, grading, operation of the farm stand and other agricultural uses, and construction of temporary structures will be allowed. Public access along a marked trail will be reserved as a right, and a trail will be constructed in the area shown on the slide in the red at a future date. Access to the trailhead will be from the SVT Wabach Farm parking area, which is over in this location. This is the SVT trail system. It's a beautiful loop if anyone's been there. And the Fairbank Trail will come off of a portion of the SVT trail in approximately this location, go along two stone walls up to a scenic viewpoint, which has magnificent views of the Boston skyline. The town of Sudbury will hold, monitor, and enforce the provisions of the APR. The cost for the APR has been derived by reviewing property appraisals to determine its value for development, similar to how the town calculates all open space proposals. Both the property owner and the town commissioned their own appraisals, and the values were very similar. The property was evaluated for its development potential, including soil testing and subdivision potential, which, although challenging due to the topography, clearly has the potential for residential development. The appraisals reflect present-day comparable land values and include development costs at the time value and the time value of the sale of a subdivision over a number of years. My point there is that it's not just a basic per-lot price. There's many calculations that go into it. The town's appraisal valued the land at present-day value under highest and best use at $1.75 million. With an APR and a reservation of one house lot, the value of the land is $975,000. The difference in the value is what the APR cost is, which is $775,000. Mr. Fairbank has reduced this price to $750,000 and is a very generous offer, is time sensitive, as noted previously. On the screen is a comparison of other recent open space purchases by the town, which shows the Fairbank property in the low range per acre compared to other recent open space purchases. In addition to the public access, the landowner has further granted the town of Sudbury the right of first refusal to purchase the reserve lot, as well as the entire farm, in the future if he decides to sell it. This right of first refusal will give us the ability to protect our investment if we so choose. The property is currently enrolled in Chapter 61A, which gives the town a right of first refusal so long as the property is enrolled in that program. However, that right would extinguish if the landowner withdrew the property from 61A. The right of first refusal in the APR remains intact in perpetuity. Approval of the article tonight will enable the selectmen to complete their negotiations with Mr. Fairbank and execute a final APR. The Board of Selectmen, the Planning Board, the Conservation Commission, the Community Preservation Restriction, and the Finance Committee support this article. I'm going to turn the rest of the presentation time over to Debbie Dineen, the town's conservation coordinator, who will highlight some of the historical aspects of the property, which make it a unique and important parcel for preservation. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. I just wanted to continue by saying that the Conservation Commission supports this article 100%, and I wanted to just give you a little bit of a historic perspective. Sudbury is no longer an agrarian society that we once were, but as a community, we've worked hard over the decades to preserve and appreciate our agricultural past. Sudbury, founded in 1639, Sudbury's early settlers were mostly farmers.
They developed the concept of government with the consent of the governed. It's those farmers that are the reason you are all sitting here tonight. Jonathan Fairbank and his family arrived from Yorkshire, England, and settled in Boston in 1633. They moved to Dedham in 1636. Early descendants branched out to the surrounding towns as more land grants were made. The first Fairbank family in Sudbury was in the late 1600s, and they settled at the corner of Peckham and Old Garrison Roads. Another Fairbank settled at the corner of Hudson and Fairbank Roads, hence the name Fairbank Road. More Fairbanks settled throughout the towns as the decades proceeded. Round Hill on Lincoln Road was once known as Fairbank Hill. Fairbanks were so plentiful in Sudbury that there were 44 Fairbanks who marched with the Sudbury Militia to Concord on April 19, 1775. In the mid-1800s, Jonathan Fairbank purchased the Tilly Smith farm on Old Sudbury Road. Mr. Smith, Tilly was a mister, built the house and barn in 1817 with surplus lumber that was available from a major hurricane that came through the area in 1815. The original barn burnt in 1890 but was rebuilt for a total of $1,000. The house lot, not part of this purchase, the barn and the land have remained in the Fairbank family, as Jody said, for the last five generations. William Fairbank, the current owner, and his sons, Jonathan and Daniel, along with their dogs, Yogi, Deputy, and Boo Boo, reside in the family homestead at the current time.
Is the name, that's the 10-minute number.
Oh.
How much longer?
Just 2 minutes.
I have to ask the consent of the hall. Does the hall wish to give Mr. Need 2 minutes? Signify by raising your cards.
Thank you. I'll be brief.
Hang on. Okay. Those opposed, you may speak.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Today, the Fairbanks farm is a working farm. With the help of another longtime Sudbury resident, Dennis Lewis, pigs and cows are raised. Compost is made to be used on the farm and sold. Several riding horses call the farm home. In fact, Fairbanks Farm is home to two-thirds of the cows in Sudbury, all six of them right now. As the human population of Sudbury has grown, the bovine population has been almost eliminated. Bill Fairbank's plans are to raise more beef cows on the property. The farm stand has been growing each year, with the greenhouses producing plants and some of the fields growing corn and pumpkins. I'm sure we all want to support sustainable agriculture so we can buy local, both produce and meat. To accomplish this, we have to support our farms. We can't buy and grow buy local if we're not growing local. That is the trail that Jody already showed you. Passing this article will allow the land to remain in farm use for perpetuity with the added benefit of the extended trail loop, as Jody described. Sudbury, in the 21st century, is a town of roadways, shopping centers, subdivisions, and houses. Yet we still have the foresight to preserve old roadways, old names, old homesteads, farms, Native American paths, stone markers, and grindstones, which are constantly visible to remind us of the town's long and rich heritage. Here is our opportunity to add to that heritage. Thank you.
Bill Nealon, Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
John Drabinski, Board of Selectmen.
Yes, Mr. Moderator. Please don't let this opportunity slip through our fingers. The Board of Selectmen supports this. Thank you.
Does the Planning Board wish to be heard? Get this way when it gets close to 10 o'clock.
I don't blame you. I'm Joe Zabowski from 799 Boston Post Road, and I'm a member of the Planning Board. And the Planning Board supports passage of Article 33. This is a primary goal of the town's master plan to preserve and enhance the rural character of Sudbury by preserving large parcels of land. And this goal has several objectives: preserving natural resources and land conservation purposes, preserving scenic views in town, and preserving what is left in Sudbury's from Sudbury's agricultural roots. But most significantly, the objective is to reduce total growth in town to lessen the many impacts of development. And I'm going to stop right there and just repeat that the Planning Board supports this article, and we urge that we urge your support to pass the article.
Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 33? Yes, sir.
Robert Abrams, 48, West Pond Road. As we saw printed in our warrant and has been reiterated here on the floor, this APR is still being negotiated. Buying this agricultural preservation restriction and agricultural preservation restriction on this land at this price is a good idea. Doing it now is not a good idea. We haven't seen the APR. It's still being negotiated. Once again, town government is putting the cart before the horse and asking us to vote to buy something. And we don't have any of the details on it yet. We shot ourselves in the foot with a similar vote a few years back when we voted to use CPC funds to buy the CSX property, which is a real bid. And we voted it while we were negotiating a purchase and sale agreement with CSX. And we borrowed the money for it because we voted it. And we paid the interest on the money that we borrowed to buy it. But we never got a purchase and sale agreement. We didn't learn as a town meeting until after the fact that it is not a proper expenditure of CPC funds to buy rail bed property. You can't do it because you don't get 100% of the title. The title can revert to rail bed. And you can't spend CPC funds if you don't get 100% of the title. And I have been told by several people, other than town council himself, that town council agrees that you can't do that. It's not a question right now, Paul, but maybe you can address it when I'm done.
Can we get back to Article 33?
Yeah, the point is Article 33 here, we're doing it again. It may be a great idea. And maybe when we finish negotiating the APR and they can put it in our warrant so we can read it and understand it and we can know where the house lot is and we can see the actual language where we get the right to access the property from SVT, property, et cetera, then it'll be a great idea. But we made the mistake once before, and I urge the hall not to make the mistake again. In that last event with the CSX property, they all said the same thing. FinCom recommended it. The selectmen begged us, don't let this one get away. The Planning Board was in favor. Everybody was in favor. And it's still a good purchase. And we still should do it when we can. But we can't do it with CPC funds. We've got to spend town money. This is a situation where we're going down the same path again. We're being asked to spend money, and we don't know what we're buying. We're being asked to approve it before they finish negotiating it. And I would respectfully suggest to the hall that we consider saying to the town, do it the right way, finish negotiating it, and bring it back to us when you're done negotiating it, and you can tell us what we're voting on. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 33? Yes.
Rick Johnson, Bent Road. Any comments from the people up on the stage on that? Especially town council, please.
Hang on a second.
Mr. Moderator, can I respond?
Mr. Dubinsky.
Mr. Abrams had a nice speech, but unfortunately the P&S agreement that we negotiated with CSX was withdrawn, so there was no purchase available because we had no P&S with them, so we could not go for the purchase. We did borrow the money, and we did. The money went back to CPA funds. So that is correct. So we did not purchase the property. This is a time-sensitive position. If we want to preserve historic properties, properties that have a value to the town, hopefully you would have faith in the individuals up here who are doing the right thing by the town of Sudbury. We did the right thing by Knobscot. We did the right thing by other town purchases to protect the environment. So please do not let that spurious argument that we don't know what we're doing, we don't have our act together, kill this deal. We need, this is a beautiful piece of property. Please support the article.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 33? Yes, sir.
Dandy Bombay, 35 Haynes Road. I don't believe there was any intent on anyone's part to demean anyone in the hall. However, I think the question was, is this a legal use? Have we convinced ourselves? Have we looked at it? And is this a legal use of CPA funds at this point in time?
Absolutely.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, over there.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I don't necessarily oppose this, but I'm not so much swayed by this argument about how time-sensitive this is. Let's face it. Basically, what we're doing is we're paying this farmer to keep on doing what he's doing. And the idea being that we're trying to keep him from developing this land at a time which is probably one of the worst times to develop a subdivision and since any of us have lived in town. So I guess I don't see why Mr. Abrams' point that this purchase and sale agreement should be put into a tighter form before we actually act doesn't make sense. I mean, what is the time sensitivity of this that means that we have to do this tonight while there's still so many loose ends dangling?
The question is, why is this time sensitive? Mr. Morley.
If you remember from Ms. Cadillac's presentation, there's a deed restriction on the property that is expiring. So each year that you get closer to that expiration, which is 2014, is that correct, Judy? The value of the property goes up. I will remind the hall it's 12 to 15 lots for $750,000.
Anybody else? Yeah, hang on. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 33? Yeah. Well, hang on a second. I made him wait a second. I'll let two more people speak, and that's it. Yes. Yes.
Laura Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. Is Mr. Fairbank here tonight, and could he tell us what the restrictions are that are still being negotiated?
The restrictions, the ones that come off in 2014?
No, it says that in the warrant, it says that the town and Mr. Fairbank are still negotiating what the restrictions will be.
Okay. The question was, is Mr. Fairbanks in the hall, and can he address what are these things that are being negotiated? Okay. Is Mr. Fairbanks or his representative here in the auditorium? Okay. Could you come down here and grab that mic?
May I have the permission of the hall to speak?
Are you a town resident?
I am not.
And what is your...
I'm Mr. Fairbanks' attorney. Mr. Fairbank is here.
You're Mr. Fairbanks' attorney?
Yes, I am.
Okay. This gentleman is an attorney representing Mr. Fairbanks. He is not a resident. He needs the consent of the majority of the hall. All those in favor signify by raising a card. Those opposed. Can you give us your name and address for the record, please?
My name is Francis Newton. My office address is 295 Turnpike Street, Canton, Mass. I was born and raised 200 yards from Mr. Fairbanks' property. I've spent approximately 25 years of my life there. I just want to point out to Ms. Bartlett that the only thing we're still negotiating is an affirmative covenant which cites a Department of Agriculture Resource, Natural Resource Conservation Service Farm Management Plan. Nobody can find that. It's a state Department of Agriculture passage, and it doesn't seem to exist. So my feeling is, why should it be in the agreement? That's the only thing, as far as we're concerned, that still needs to be addressed. Other than that, we have a deal.
Okay, thank you. And this is the last speaker. Yes.
Mr. Moderator, the deed restriction expires in 3 years, according to what we were told. And the fact that as the time of the expiration of the deed restriction gets closer and closer, the value of the property goes up is a proposition that, while it may be true, is certainly not proven. The bottom has been dropping out of the real estate market. So I just don't see the reason why this is so time sensitive. The deed restriction doesn't expire for 3 years. Property values are going down. Where's the argument here?
Hang on a second. That was a question. 30 seconds to answer, and then we move on to the vote.
Okay. I had an answer, and now it just went right out of my head. First off, one would need Mr. Coe to study the real estate market much more closely in Sudbury, which we have. And secondly, in addition to, as we get closer to 2014, the price may go up, the landowner is desirous of selling the property now. And that's really the bottom line.
Okay. We're now voting. This is a majority vote. You see the motion on the view graph. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it's well more than even two-thirds, and it required only a majority of passes. The next article is 34. We've already voted that on the consent calendar. Article 35, which is the last CPC article. Mr. Morley.
Move to appropriate the sums as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee in the following Community Preservation budget for fiscal year 12 Community Preservation surtaxes. $85,000 for administrative and operating costs, $1,226,556 for debt service, and further to reserve the following funds: $25,513 for historic preservation, $102,931 for budgeted unrestricted CPC uses.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley?
I don't feel the need to take up more time to talk about it. If someone has questions, I can certainly answer.
Thank you. Joan Carlton for the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
John Drabinski, Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen recommend approval. Thank you, Ms. Moderator.
Anybody have any questions or comments on Article 35? I see none. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? It is a unanimous vote. We're on to Article 36. This is to reduce the CPA surcharge from 3% to 1.5%. Mr. Johnson, you have a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. At this time, I'd like to ask that this article be indefinitely postponed.
Could you just say, I move to indefinitely postpone?
I move to indefinitely postpone this
article. Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Johnson, you care to say anything?
I do not.
Okay. Does Joan Carlton, the Finance Committee, have an opinion on his motion, which is to indefinitely postpone?
We're fine with that.
Fine with that. Board of Selectmen, John Drabinski?
We support that motion.
Support that motion. Anybody wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? I see no hands. All those in favor of the motion signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It is a unanimous vote.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. We're now on Article 37. Article 37, did this article appeared in the warrant, did it not?
Yes, sir.
You cannot withdraw it. So does the petitioner of this article wish to make a motion to indefinitely postpone? Is the petitioner here in the House? Does anybody... Excuse me?
I have an email from
Not interested in the email. Thank you. Does anybody wish to make a motion to indefinitely postpone?
Mr.
Yes.
Okay.
Excuse me. Go ahead. Sorry.
Adam Miller, Knob Scott Road. I move to indefinitely postpone Article 37.
Seven. Does that receive a second? It does. No, you have to make a presentation now, Adam. No, I'm kidding. All those in favor of the motion to indefinitely postpone, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes unanimously. We're now on Article 38, which is the purchase of land off Brimstone Lane. It is also a petition. David Wallace to make a motion. Do we have our we have the motion on the view graph, please? Article 38. Do you have it? There we go. Mr. Wallace.
I move in the words of the motion.
So he moves in the words as shown on the view graph. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Is there a second, Mr. Wallace, for presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Dave Wallace, 15 Hilltop Road. I was the selectman from 1986 to 1992, and I think this is the first time since 1992 I've been up here to speak to you. This motion differs from what's printed in the warrant in that the Community Preservation Committee has already voted not to use CPA funds for this purpose. In addition, we're not asking the Board of Selectmen to acquire the property by eminent domain. I want to make it clear, I'm not here representing any town board. I represent the petitioners, Eva McNeil of 54 Brimstone Lane, and her brother-in-law, Malcolm McNeil, who are owners of this property through the Mallet Real Estate Trust and have been for many years. The McNeils own approximately 24 acres of undeveloped land right off of Brimstone Lane with access to Brimstone Lane. And this land directly abuts the Boy Scout land, which we've heard so much about, and over which we have now an easement to preserve it entirely with no development and to use it. I'd like to show you the location. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. There's the property right there. This over here is the Boy Scout land. This is the McNeil land. And the property that we're proposing to sell to the town is this area below the blue-gray line. That's 9 acres. The other part of the property is approximately 15 acres. And that is not for sale presently, but we'd certainly be willing to give the town the right of first refusal.
Hang on 1 second, David. Everyone understand where the 9 acres is, or do you need that shown again?
The 9 acres was right here.
Where?
I'm outlining.
Below that blue line there?
Yes. Okay. There's the access out to Brimstone Lane.
So everybody knows where the 9 acres is now, right? Okay.
And then the Boy Scout land is over here.
My clients are offering the 9 acres of their land for a purchase price of $900,000. These 9 acres have undergone percolation testing and would support 3 new homes. Nancy B. Taylor Real Estate has determined that each of these three building lots would have a fair market value of approximately $375,000 each. Okay, you see that on the view graph. I have walked my client's land and can tell you that it's strikingly beautiful, with a variable topography including steep areas sloping to a large wetland. The land is valuable to wildlife and is habitat for many species. And if we could just show some pictures of the property. Perhaps the greatest value that the McNeil land has for the town of Sudbury is the access that it can provide to the adjacent Boy Scout land. Now, as you know, on November 12, 2008, after an active town meeting, the town of Sudbury, acting through its Conservation Commission and the Sudbury Valley Trustees, purchased a conservation restriction from the Boy Scouts of America for the sum of $8,600,000, the Boy Scouts agreed to preserve a 303-acre portion of its Knobscot Scout reservation in Sudbury in its natural, undeveloped state for eternity. In addition, the Boy Scouts agreed to allow public access to its land for a wide variety of educational and passive recreational activities. Of the $8,600,000 of purchase price, the annual town meeting of 2008 appropriated the sum of $7,585,000 from CPF funds to enable the purchase. Off-street parking from Brimstone Lane would be provided by the McNeil land and would give Sudbury residents direct on-foot access to the Boy Scout land without having to travel to the main entrance on Knobscot Road. The town's purchase of the Boy Scouts developmental rights for $7,585,000 is certainly justified, if only to keep 303 acres from being turned into an overwhelming number of single-family homes, which would have added to Sudbury's school and public services burden. But with the addition of the McNeil land, Sudbury residents would be able to enjoy the full benefit of their almost $8 million purchase by being able to actively enjoy the magnificent urban oasis that is the Boy Scout land, including its hiking trails, spectacular views from Boston to New Hampshire, and significant opportunities for community passive recreational use. Moreover, in June of 2009, Sudbury published its 2009-2013 Open Space Recreational Plan, in which the McNeil's Brimstone Lane was identified by the town as a parcel which Sudbury considers a priority for preservation. Sudbury will greatly benefit from purchasing my client's 9 acres, not only from a recreational and preservation standpoint, but also from a pragmatic, smart business decision standpoint. Probably most Sudbury residents are unaware of the fact that the McNeils and the town are presently engaged in litigation regarding the use or non-use of the McNeils land. Without commenting on the strength of each side's claims and defenses, I can say that a trial is scheduled in the land court for September 12th to 14th this year. As to the underlying basis of the lawsuit, I will only say that the McNeils have challenged the town's decision to deny them the right to build two houses on the land in question. By purchasing my client's 9 acres, the pending lawsuit will become meaningless and will then be dismissed. The town will save considerable legal fees that would have been spent on the trial of this case. A finding and decision of the land court will be avoided, which would have been a serious blow to either the town or the McNeils. The purchase of this breathtaking property will result in a positive and beneficial solution for both the town and the McNeils. The town will acquire a property which has already expressed a strong desire to maintain in its present undeveloped state. The McNeils will be justly compensated for the land that the town so far has ruled may not be developed in any meaningful way. A lawsuit in which only one party can prevail will be avoided. And I ask you to support this motion. Thank you.
Marty Raganese for the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee opposes this article.
I couldn't hear you. A little close to the mic.
The Finance Committee opposes this article.
Okay. John Drabinski for the Selectmen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Moderator. As you just heard in the previous discussion of Fairbanks preservation, the town has a very comprehensive review and vetting process for requiring open space. This process really doesn't follow that process, so therefore the Board of Selectmen can't support this article.
A little closer to the mic on that last line.
You want me to repeat what I said?
Just okay. The last line.
I'm sorry. People complained last night they couldn't hear me. As you heard in the Fairbanks discussion earlier about preservation, the town has a very comprehensive and complete vetting process to acquire open space. This article doesn't really go through that process of the vetting and evaluation of the property. So without that complex and comprehensive process, the Board of Selectmen cannot support this article.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 41? Ms. Deneen. Yes? David, can you push over a bit?
Sure. Good evening again. Debbie Deneen speaking on behalf of the Conservation Commission. The McNeil family does own a magnificent 20.85 undeveloped parcel of land that does abut Knobscot. The natural resource values are tremendous, with prime wildlife habitat, water resources, mature vegetation cover, slopes, boulders, state-listed species. It's on the open space and recreation plan and would make a wonderful addition to our town's conservation area. However, the town is being offered only the southernmost 9 plus or minus acre half of this property. This is the portion of the property that contains wetlands and steep slopes. It has a lot of development constraints on it. To access the property, there would need to be alteration of a small wetland area. The property preliminary subdivision was denied by the Planning Board for failure to meet zoning requirements and requests for waivers. Although there might be a monetary value in settling the lawsuit, it has never been the policy of the Conservation Commission to support the purchase of a property that we are being bullied into because of a lawsuit. The appraisal that Attorney Wallace cited was not really an appraisal. It was a comparative market analysis that was based on permits in hand and that did not take into account infrastructure costs for the basis of the development. Therefore, the Conservation Commission feels that the article is before the town meeting prematurely. The cost is not based in any justifiable facts right now. And if the remaining 10 plus or minus acres gets developed, then the conservation values of this 9-acre parcel could get significantly diminished. Therefore, the Commission hopes that in the future the town has an opportunity to purchase the entire 20.75 undeveloped acres of this land at a price that's fair and justifiable. This is not that time. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 38? Yes, Mr. Coe.
Mr. Moderator, Mr. Wallace has implied in his presentation, I believe, at least my understanding is that he was saying that buying this land gives the town access to the Boy Scout reservation from Brimstone Lane. Now, my wife and I have hiked into the Boy Scout reservation from Brimstone Lane using what I believe is some kind of easement or property owned by the Conservation Commission. Is there not, in fact, access to this land from Brimstone Lane now, and therefore it's not necessary to buy this land in order to get it?
Is the name, please? Right there.
Yes. Hi. The answer to Mr. Coe's question is yes. There is town access through Brimstone Lane, through the Knobscot Conservation Land, into the Boy Scout land. There's also access through the Bushy parcel, which we talked about for the Route 20 sewers last night. There is a trail that is town-owned that goes directly up into the Knobscot Boy Scout land. So at the present time, there are at least three accesses. One is off of Knobscot Road, owned by the Boy Scouts, and two are directly owned by the town through town-owned conservation land.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 38? I see no one. All those in favor of this Article 38, as you see it on the view graph, signify by raising your hands. Oh. We have one hand. Am I missing any? Two hands. Okay. All those opposed, signify by raising your cards. It needed a two-thirds affirmative vote. It doesn't get anything close to even a majority. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Wallace.
You, Mr.
We're about to start our last article. Before we do, I'd like to thank all the people here who've helped with town meeting. Particularly, I'd like to thank all of you who've taken this time off to come to town meeting and exercise your right to legislate. So thank all of you. If there are any town officials who were just elected or appointed but have not been sworn in, please come forward as soon as we adjourn to get sworn in by the town clerk. We're now going to move on to Article 39, which is a resolution. And under our custom, the petitioner will give a five-minute presentation. I will then ask the Finance Committee for an opinion if they have one, the Board of Selectmen for an opinion if they have one. There is no debate on a resolution. I will then call for a vote. We never hand count a resolution. I will tell you whether it's overwhelming one way or the other or it's too close to call. Mr. DePompei for a reading of the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. In the words of the resolution, with one change. Can you go to the last paragraph, which is the actual resolution? The one change is where you see semi-annual highlighted. When I wrote the resolution and added, as it appears in your warrant, it says biannual. I didn't know the difference between biannual and semi-annual. I'm requesting the meeting be on a semi-annual basis.
Yes, so it's as shown on the view graph, which has the semi-annual, which is the same as in the warrant, except switching the word semi-annual from biannual, correct?
Yes, sir. That is
please,
correct, Mr. Moderator.
You have your 5 minutes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Just go to the first slide and leave it right there. The purpose of this resolution is, one, to increase engagement between town management and the town residents, two, to increase public understanding of town annual and long-range plans. The background, really, is warrants, resolutions, and projects that we approve at town meeting are, in effect, the annual plan for Sudbury. The assignment of goals and objectives that go along with the warrants, plans, etc., provide an overarching framework for continuous improvement and movement toward the master plan and all of our vision for Sudbury. One of the difficulties, and I think we've seen a lot of it in town meeting this year, is there currently is limited opportunity for real-time open public discussion of the status of the warrants, resolutions, and projects either that are approved or are proposed for town meeting. There currently is limited opportunity for real-time open discussion of the goals and objectives that are set by the selectmen. There is a warrant, or excuse me, there is a town report, but the town report states what we've done in the past. It doesn't necessarily cover the end of the current fiscal year or go into how we're planning for the future fiscal years. Where did this idea come from? Well, it comes from a lot of places. It's certainly not, I didn't originate this idea. It is the best practice for organizations, both commercial and government, to report on a regular basis the status of programs, projects, goals, and objectives. It creates the opportunity for engagement of all participants. It increases transparency. It increases understanding. And it also increases the probability of success. So, a vote in support of Article 39, Resolution Article 39, is a vote in support of real-time engagement between town government and town residents. It creates the opportunity for increased transparency and an improved understanding of town operations. Please vote yes to support Article 39. By the way, I'd like to add, it's not a new idea. Apparently, we used to have meetings that were referred to as the town fathers meetings, where we all got together and did exactly what I'm proposing. It's also not unique to Sudbury. Lincoln currently does this, and at the last Board of Selectmen meeting, one of the representatives from Lincoln got up and said, it's a great idea, I recommend you do it. Thank you very much.
Does the Finance Committee have an opinion on this subject?
The Finance Committee has no opinion on this article.
Thank you. Does the Board of Selectmen have an opinion on the subject?
The Board of Selectmen support this resolution.
Okay. Since we have no debate on the subject, we'll just call for a vote. All those in favor of the resolution signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes by well more than a majority. So the resolution is in passes. Mr. Drabinski, you wish to make a motion to dissolve the 2011 annual town meeting?
I couldn't say it any better, Mr. Moderator.
Is there a second? There is. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, passes by well more than the majority. Thank you all very much.